Welcome to the 8th episode of Celluloid Tunes, the second international edition. Celluloid Tunes is the first and only webcast about film music in Norway, and my name is Tor Joachim Haga. Now, I know I said that the next international edition would be episode 10, but I had to make an exception now, since I've just returned from a wonderful film music week in Europe to see James Horner live in Vienna and Danny Elfman live in London. Now, we've already done an episode on Elfman, but in Vienna, I even got the opportunity to speak with Horner himself, as well as the conductor and composer David Newman and the concert producer Sandra Tomek. So, while this is a special James Horner episode, it's not really a typical retrospective. It's mostly focused on this particular event. And then we might do a more traditional Horner episode later on. So, I went to the annual Hollywood in Vienna concert that has showcased a major international film composer since its inception back in 2007. And the mind behind this concept is concert producer Sandra Tomek. And I asked her about some of the ideas behind this concert.
Well, the challenge in the first place in Vienna is that film music was something totally new a few years ago. You know, Vienna is a very conservative place. You know, classical music is celebrated all over the place. And actually, everybody told me film music is not going to work here, you know. And this is a bit typical Viennese, that they always say that's not going to work. But I was sure it would work, and I took the risk, and I produced the first concert, and now it's like that, this concert was sold out within 3 hours, you know. So, yes. And also the past year, we only had sold out concert. So the audience reception is fantastic. We also have a film music symposium. We had that yesterday, where the composers talk to the audience. It's always a huge success, and people love it.
Hollywood in Vienna has previously hosted guests such as Alan Silvestri, Lalo Schifrin, and Howard Shore. And I wondered why they had chosen James Horner this year. Why him in particular? And this is what Sandra Tomek told me.
I really wanted him to be here for years. I was just always told he is so timid, he doesn't accept this invitation. This year I thought, I'm just going to try. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, as you might know, that his father is Viennese, actually, Harry Horner. And it's a very interesting story, because Harry Horner, he was the set designer of main theaters in Vienna. He also went to the Max Reinhardt Seminar. I'm not sure you know Max Reinhardt. He was one of the biggest stage directors in Europe. And he was one of his best companions. And the two of them were Jewish and had to emigrate to the United States. And Harry Horner then became a set designer in Hollywood and was also awarded with 2 Oscars. Mm. And nominated multiple times.
Yes.
So James Horner actually also speaks German. He's too timid to speak, but he always talked German with his father. Yeah. Yes. So there's a big Viennese connection, and I guess that he accepted the invitation because he has these ties to Vienna. Mm.
Now, we will get to the interviews with both James Horner and David Newman eventually, but first let's play something by the man himself. And I wanted to play the actual concert cues for many of these things, the actual recordings from the concert. And I'll start off with the end titles cue from Braveheart, from 1995. You know, the lush, romantic theme with these Celtic or Gaelic colours. And the soloist in this case is Geza Frank on Irish bagpipes. That was the entitled cue from Braveheart, as performed live in Vienna on the 4th of October this year. Now, I also got the opportunity to speak with the conductor of the concert, David Newman, who is himself a renowned film composer, having done the scores to such films as The Phantom, Heathers, The War of the Roses, Hoffa, The Flintstones, Ice Age, and many more. Newman is a very eloquent speaker who had many interesting things to say, not only about Horner, but also about the concept of having film music performed live. Before we get to Horner, I wanted to share his thoughts on this relatively new phenomenon about film music concerts being arranged all around the world.
I think film music bridges populism with art music, concert music. It's populist, but it's concert music. Most of it is orchestra music that can be played by any great orchestra or any regional orchestra or a college, as we would say in America, a college orchestra or a high school orchestra. You know, it's just part of the landscape now. And I think it developed more in Europe sooner than it's developed in America, but it's really developed in America now too. And it's very popular in Asia. It's very popular in South America. And it seems to be growing.
Yeah.
And I think because it's a good mixture. It's something an orchestra that is always looking to raise money can do that's a bit different. It's referential. People have seen these films, so when they come, they remember. It has a nice kind of quality to it, but it's still symphonic music. And the best of it is very good live concert music. You know, not all of it is, but when you there's so much to choose from.
Right.
You know, film music is a really young art form. It's an American art form, but it's based on European concert music. Mm-hmm. It's based on, in my opinion, it's based on German and Viennese opera, a little bit of Puccini, of Italian opera in terms of the arioso nature of the melodies. And the Germanic part of it is the motivic development of it. So that themes are built mostly in film music out of motives, a little couple of bars kinds of stuff, and it's thematic. It's about a character. In a movie, it might be about something visual because, you know, in a movie, the camera's always pointing at something. So there's this point of view kind of art that's in a movie that isn't in any other art form, you know. So music can also address that. But it also addresses all the duality of emotions or the things that you can feel and think simultaneously in our brains. We can feel beauty and sadness at the same time, or joy and scared, being scared or being any of that our brains can do things at the same time. You can't really do that in a linear art form, but music can do that, and film and visual medium, I think, is so evocative and so much of our visual sense is so profound that music that's connected up with visuals takes on this kind of weird power.
Yeah.
And people that are good at it, and it's not easy to do because you can miss it one side or the other, but when it's done well, it has the ability to be a good piece of music by itself, but also work really well for a film, that then you remember what the film is, but then you remember the music and, you know, etc.
While Newman is a very enthusiastic and introvert person, as you could hear in this clip, Horner is considerably more private and shy. So what did he think about having his own music performed live?
I've really not had any of my music performed. I've been asked a lot, but I've never really done that. I've always thought of myself as always moving forward and not looking back on what I've done. So I've really never given concerts before. This is a really sort of a first for me.
But how is it like as a film composer? Because you work inside your studio and suddenly you have to be in public and get all this music out there in a different way. That must be strange.
It's strange, but when I make the music, I have to be all out in front of the orchestra all day and my employers, and it's not really any different from that. What's different is hearing pieces that I wrote, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, music that I've sort of, I don't listen to. I don't listen to my own music. I can't even remember anything I've, very little that I've done. I sort of move on forward. So when I hear things, it's just interesting to hear a film again.
Because you previously expressed a sort of, I don't know, discontent with the classical scene and the contemporary classical scene, if I'm right. So this is a bit different because this is your film music. This is not a classical scene in a way.
That's true. But it is... It's a world of working with music that I wrote a long time ago, and I just don't think in the past. I'm very different. I know a lot of composers, you know, love to put their music in concert all the time. I'm not like that. I've just never thought like that.
This was actually recorded the day before the first of the two concerts, and as it turned out, he was very moved by the performances. As I could easily see because I was seated just two rows behind him. So let's hear another selection from the concert. This is the beautiful pastoral theme from Legends of the Fall from 1995, which captures the wide open spaces of the Montana Territory in the film. That was the Ludlow's theme from Legends of the Fall from 1995, the actual concert performance from October 4th in Vienna. Now, I wanted to follow up my earlier question about his relationship to his own past and the fact that more and more specialty labels are releasing his older material. Whether he was proud of this development or whether he'd rather not have many of these things released at all. And this is what he said. But it's very interesting that you say that, because a lot of composers don't like to look back. And yet you see this interest in yourself as well. The specialty labels releasing some of your older scores from the 80s. And I was always wondering, do you see that as a sort of an honor? Or is it more like, no, I'd rather have that buried in the past. I don't like to.
Oh, that's a good question. It depends on how far back. Some films I wouldn't do now. And so some films I'd prefer if the soundtrack wasn't released. There are other films that weren't successful but were, I thought, good compositions that I wish would be on a soundtrack that now get reissued. But a lot of the films that were very successful and had very successful soundtracks are being reissued, which is sort of interesting. I never thought there'd be that kind of interest, or, you know, whether that world really existed.
Now, Horner doesn't get specific about the scores of the past that he'd rather not have out there, but I think it's fair to assume that he's talking about the early days of working for Roger Corman in B-movie productions. And I asked Horner about this part of his career.
It's interesting because I talked to Joe Dante yesterday, and he...
Well, that's what I mean. That's
yeah, funny. And we were talking, and I suddenly thought maybe you had some connection because you both worked for Roger Corman in the day. But he was very proud of the old Corman works, and maybe you're not sort of the same? Or...
Well... Joe Dante has a very different career from mine. What is he doing now?
I think he's working on a biopic of Roger Corman or something.
His biggest days as a director were when he was working for Roger Corman and just after. And he got a couple of big breaks. Then nothing really, you know, gelled for him in terms of a director moving forward, and like Ron Howard, for instance.
Who you've worked with as well.
Who I've worked with as well, And I wouldn't say that my best days were working for Roger Corman. Roger Corman didn't know much about music. He knew a lot about film. But he knew that he needed music. And it was a perfect place for me to jump from classical music into film music and learn how to be a producer and how to make it for no money and all of that. And the films weren't great. But that didn't mean anything. That didn't matter. It was learning a new art form,
a trade.
Skill, a trade.
I'm not going to play any of his earlier work for Roger Corman now, but I'd like to play a cue from the film that lifted him out of this period and into the big leagues, in a way, into the A-list of film composers. And I'm obviously talking about Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan from 1982, as an example of Horner's early career and a point in time where he had really defined many of his trademark elements, you know, like the danger motif, the crashing pianos, the aggressive brass writing, and so on. And this is, again, the actual concert recording.
Space. Sound. Music. The final frontiers. These are the continuing voyages of James Horner. His ongoing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new forms of sound and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before. Thank you.
That was a cue from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, from 1982. One of the scores and films that mean a lot to me personally is Aliens from 1986, James Cameron's sequel to Ridley Scott's classic science fiction movie from 1979. And the sheer energy and wild writing in this particular score, with the clanging percussion and the pounding excitement, really provided the pulse and the heart of the film in many ways. And here's Horner's thoughts on the film and of the relationship to James Cameron.
Jim and I had worked a couple of times together when he was at Roger Corman. You know, he was a cameraman there and an editor. Mm. I should say an editor, then a cameraman. Mm. And then he made Aliens. So I met Jim when he was a cameraman on a movie called Battle Beyond the Stars. Just centuries ago. It's his first film.
Right.
And it happened to be a film that was Roger Corman's first film that was co-produced with a larger film company, Orion. Mm. I believe it was called Orion Pictures. And it was released by Paramount.
Mm.
And that's how Paramount discovered me.
Mm.
And that was my first stepping stone and going up doing movies for them. But Aliens was interesting because I think he was under a lot of pressure to get it done within a certain time frame.
Mm.
And he was used to doing everything himself. And Corman. Mm. Doing the camera, doing the this, doing the that, quickly, quick, 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 set it up.
Mm.
And in England, all these sets had to be done, and it was slow. And I went over to England to start writing the music, and they were still shooting the film. They hadn't even edited, and the studio didn't really know.
It's a stressful situation.
But it got done. I just had very little time to write the script. It's a difficult assignment for me.
It's strange that he says it's a very rushed score, because my impression is that it's very full-bodied. There's a lot of thought that has gone into it, and you certainly can't feel anything rushed about the end result. So with that, let's play a cue from Aliens. And since they only played a brief snippet of this cue in the actual concert, let's play a track from the original soundtrack. And this is the famous Bishop's Countdown cue that was used in many trailers at the time and became a sort of staple on how to write horror / science fiction scores in the 80s.
Thank you.
That was Bishop's Countdown from Aliens. Now, I asked Horner about two films, which was really all I had time for. The first was Aliens, as we just heard. The second one is a far more restrained and beautiful score that has always been one of my personal favorites. And I'm talking about The Boy in the Striped Pajamas from 2008, which is a film about the friendship, really, of two young boys during the Second World War, one on each side of the fence of a concentration camp. And there's just something about the slightly minimalistic, heartfelt textures of this score that at least resonates with me personally. And I asked Horner about the conceptualization of this work, the idea behind it.
What's sort of the idea behind that score in terms of setting the childlike innocence versus the darkness of the concentration camps?
The only scene that I did darkly was the end of the movie, which is this long, long sequence. It's very intense. Mm. The rest of it was done as this Brahms-like lullaby. And it was just meant to capture the period and capture the family and capture the boy and capture the story without scoring it. It was wistful.
Right.
Is an English word.
Bittersweet. Or
bittersweet, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It wasn't meant to sort of score the movie. It was meant more to be thoughts.
Right.
Of that period. And how everything goes wrong. Mm. But that was really the sort of assignment I set for myself.
The concept behind
it. Yeah.
And to illustrate some of what we were just talking about in this clip, let's hear a cue from the film. This is the track The Odd Discovery Beyond the Trees from The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. Thank you. That was the track The Odd Discovery Beyond the Trees from The Boy in the Striped Pajamas from 2008, a personal favorite of mine. Of course, we have to include Horner's most famous soundtrack in this episode, and that is, of course, his score for James Cameron's blockbuster Titanic from 1997. And to lead us into that, here is David Newman again, talking about his relationship to James Horner and this score in particular.
We're about the same age. We kind of grew up in Los Angeles. James was a composer. I was playing violin and conducting. I did a bit of conducting for James early on a few films, early like B-movie films that he did before. His real breakout film was Wrath of Khan. That was really when he really, really broke out. So I'll tell you, though, what I think is interesting. All this stuff we heard tonight is all big, long themes, but they're built out of motives because you have very little time in a film to make a statement. Generally, in a film somewhere, you can make a big statement, but mostly you can't. So either you write like a big theme and then you pull motives from it, or you have motives and you build your theme out of motives. In the beginning of Titanic, the cue that we did, you have a theme for the grandmother, the woman that's thinking of it, which is what she's saying, the soprano that we just, you know.
Right.
And then the strings come in, and they come in with the love theme. They're playing the love theme on top of her little Celtic kind of Irish thing. I would bet most people wouldn't even notice that that's the song. That's the theme of the Celine Dion song that's going over it. So you don't notice it, but it's telling you, it's connecting the young people with the old people, it's connecting her with it, you know. This is the kind of stuff that I think a really good film composer can do.
Let's spend the next 11 minutes listening to the actual concert suite from Titanic that was played in Vienna on October 4th.
Thank you.
That was the concert suite of Titanic, as performed live in Vienna on October 4th this year. Now, there is so much more that I wanted to play from the concert, like the Avatar suite, which is another personal favorite of mine, and of course the Horner medley, which included themes to several great scores and films like Willow, Apollo 13, Mask of Sorrow, The Beautiful Mind, as well as scores from Horner's output otherwise. But since we already have a fairly long episode, I think we'll have to save that to a later special edition about the composer. Instead, I'll finish with a question I posed to Horner about his coming projects, and especially the double concerto for violin and cello that he was supposed to write for the Norwegian soloists Håkon and Mari Samuelsen.
What's the next project that you're working on right now? Do you have anything interesting to share?
I'm deciding on a couple of things. I haven't decided yet. I'm sort of wondering if I'm going to do what I want to do. I've been asked to do a couple of big films that I'm not so keen on doing. I'm looking for something smaller, but more beautiful to do.
What about the double concerto for the Norwegian soloists that I've heard some rumors about, for violin and cello?
Oh, yes.
Marian Håkon Samuelsen.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting for a Norwegian, just as a last...
I'm doing that. I'm writing that.
You are?
Yeah, as we speak. So that'll be very interesting to do, because I've not really written a classical piece for the concert world for a long time. I've just been in film. So when I was asked, I thought it would be good for me artistically to try something different. But it puts me in a different league now. Now I'm not dealing with Hollywood contemporaries. I'm dealing with the real guys. Now I'm in the same league as Brahms and Mozart and Prokofiev, and my music has to sort of stand a different... test.
Scary, scary.
It's much scary. Yeah. The real...
Yeah.
Yeah.
The real world.
Yeah. The real world.
Right. So that was my too short conversation with James Horner. I do hope that I get the chance to talk with him at a later date, maybe to ask some more in-depth questions about his career when we're not so pressed for time. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. It was... certainly a joy making it, probably the most ambitious that I've done to date. To both our Norwegian and international listeners, I hope you'll share this episode in your social media, and please like and share our Facebook page as well. While most of our episodes are in Norwegian, we do have English episodes like this once in a while, usually every 5 episodes. So just stay tuned and follow our news updates on Facebook, for example. So, until next time, I'll just say happy listening.